produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Wednesday, March 5th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belleville. You can make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. Join up with the dedicated, hardworking activists of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws at norml.org. I want to take a moment to thank all the people who have visited our blog at stash.normal.org. Not only will you find the expanded text and links for all of our daily hemp headlines, you'll also find the downloads for the full podcast and all of our PodSafe music, commentary from myself, and other activists. And you can leave your comments for the whole cannabis community to read. It's news, it's commentary, it's music, it's the blog that only Normal can deliver. The Daily Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. Also, if you have a product that you would like to market to the cannabis community, you can advertise on the Daily Audio Stash. Your ad will be focused on exactly the customer base you're seeking out, the thousands of responsible cannabis consumers who download and listen to this show. Our listeners are educated consumers who want to support the businesses that support the growing truth about cannabis, and we deliver the advertising freedom you won't find on radio, TV, or print ads. To advertise on the Daily Audio Stash, send us an email at stash@normal.org. Now, Wednesday is Cannabis Science Day here on the Stash, and coming up after the news, we're separating the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Today, we look at the scare stories about the use of cannabis increasing your chance of developing schizophrenia. Cannabis Carrie has unearthed a folk singer for us today named John Nicholson, who will be performing his song Grandma for our musical break. Then we finish up the podcast with an interview with Danny Danko, the cultivation editor from High Times Magazine, to discuss what you need to do to get ready for the outdoor planting season this spring. So welcome to the show, sit back with your favorite strain, and enjoy your normal daily audio stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. We have a couple of news alerts here today on the Daily Audio Stash that we'd like everyone to take advantage of, that we'd like everyone to take notice of. First of all, we have an alert from our friend Dan Vietz in Missouri, who asks us to save medical marijuana in Missouri. I want you to know that a group of medical marijuana patients and their supporters will be traveling to the Missouri State Capitol today, Wednesday, March 5th, to meet at noon at the Cannon on the first floor of the Missouri State Capitol, near the center of the Capitol Rotunda. We'll gather there and sometime between 12:30 and 1 p.m. go to the office of House Speaker Rod Jetton at room 308 to urge him to give our medical marijuana bill, HB 1830, an assignment to a committee. After that, beginning at approximately 1:30 p.m., we'll hold a press conference back on the first floor of the Capitol Rotunda. Even if you cannot be with us today, please call your Missouri State Representative and Senator and urge them to support medical marijuana. If you do not know who these people are, you may find that and a great deal of other information about the legislation by going to house.mo.gov and senate.mo.gov, or visit our links at the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. Thank you for your efforts in support of Normal and marijuana law reform. Sincerely, Dan Vietz, Missouri Normal Coordinator. So yes, we want to encourage all of our listeners in the Missouri area, if you are hearing this before 12 noon your time, to get out to the state capitol and make your support known. The more these legislators know that the people support medical marijuana, the more likely they'll be to move forward on this bill. And in our second news alert, Dr. Molly Fry is to be sentenced for medical marijuana. The federal sentencing of medical marijuana defendants Dr. Molly Fry and her husband, Attorney Dale Schaefer, will take place on Thursday, March 6th, at the U.S. Courthouse in Sacramento. The sentencing is at 10 a.m. There will be a press conference afterwards at noon in front of the courthouse. The couple was denied the right to defend their actions that were protected under the laws of the state of California. Quote, "We would never have grown marijuana had it not been sanctioned by the laws of the state of California, the Attorney General of California, and the District Attorney and Sheriffs of El Dorado County. Why aren't they being charged with conspiracy to violate federal law?" End quote. Dr. Fry asks a group of patients who are waiting to see her at a clinic. Dr. Fry and her husband face a likely 5-year mandatory minimum sentence for conspiracy to cultivate and dispense medical marijuana for a small number of Dr. Fry's patients. They ran and continue to run a popular medical marijuana clinic in El Dorado County that provides recommendations for many needy patients in the Sierra foothills. See www.docfry.com for more information. Like other federal defendants, they were denied their right to mention medical marijuana or Prop 215 in their trial. Both are in fragile health. Dale has hemophilia and suffers from chronic back pain, and Molly is a breast cancer survivor. They were among the first medical marijuana providers raided by the Bush administration just a couple of weeks after 9/11, but were not successfully indicted until June 22, 2005, after the Raich decision was overturned by the Supreme Court. The sentences they face are particularly egregious compared to other defendants who have grown far more marijuana. They are liable to a 5-year mandatory minimum because they were convicted of growing not a lot more than 100 plants over a period of 3 years, a number far smaller than is usually prosecuted by federal authorities. The jury was forced to add 3 different years' worth of gardens to come up with the 100-plant count. They were not allowed to mention at their trial that local law enforcement had deliberately entrapped them by telling them it was okay to grow their relatively modest garden, or that they had received advice of counsel supporting their right to grow and care for others under the law in California. The Attorney General, Bill Lockyer, the District Attorney and Sheriff in El Dorado County were all aware and supportive of Dr. Fry and Schaefer's activities, but the jury was also denied these truths. Fry and Schaefer's case aptly exemplifies the kind of DEA enforcement abuses that Senate Joint Resolution 20 condemns. Patients and medical marijuana rights supporters are welcome to attend. So we remind you, it's the sentencing of Dr. Molly Fry and her husband. This will be a sentencing on March 6th, 2008, at 10 a.m. at the Federal Courthouse in Sacramento, California. There will be a press conference to follow at noon. Hemp concrete in 6.2 million pound eco center from Wales in the United Kingdom. Environmentally friendly concrete made from a variety of the cannabis plant is being used on a new 6.2 million pound project at an eco center in Wales. Made from hemp and called hempcrete, the mixture is being applied to the walls at the Center for Alternative Technology. A lot of energy is used to make the common form of concrete in comparison to its greener cousin. Hemp is legal and part of the cannabis species, which includes marijuana. It is identical in appearance to the illegal drug, but it lacks the narcotic qualities. Hemp is grown in the UK and recognized to be a versatile crop and is used to make many retail products. Hempcrete, made from hemp stalks, lime, and a small quantity of cement, produces less carbon emissions than conventional concrete. The product is being sprayed onto the Heraclith or wood wool boards at the Centre's New Wales Institute for Sustainable Education. The £6.2 million training and conference venue will extend the Eco Centre's courses in subjects such as sustainable architecture and solar power for electricians. Boy, and meanwhile, the United States still bans the cultivation of hemp to be made into such environmentally friendly products, because you can't smoke hemp, but it looks like something you could smoke, so we just can't be too careful. Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal. Pass the Stash is our brand new weekly contest. So new, in fact, that we're going to extend this week's contest to give more people a chance to participate. We're giving away three copies of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's new book, Parents' Guide to Marijuana, and all you have to do to win is send an email. Just write down your questions on parenting and marijuana and send them to 420research@gmail.com, and Dr. Earlywine will select three questions to answer on next week's Daily Audio Stash. Those three will win a copy of the new book, and you will remain anonymous. Get your questions in now to 420research@gmail.com, and you could win Pass the Stash.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
All right, as is usual here on our Wednesday Daily Audio Stash, we like to sit down with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany, and also the author of the new book, Parents' Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Mitch Earlywine, welcome back to the Stash.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, let's start off with your book here, The Parents' Guide to Marijuana. I just got my copy here, and it's a nice book, about 100 pages, pretty easy to read, nice and conversational. Tell folks what you're trying to accomplish with this book.
The bottom line on this is a lot of folks my age, Russ, are having their kids come up and starting to ask about marijuana-related questions, and they get stuck in certain situations where they know they don't want their kids to use marijuana, but they know that the lies that they learned in the DARE program or in other educational efforts are clearly not something they want to repeat. And so I just walk through the literature and talk to them about, first of all, listening first, and then making sure that the kids get to ask all the questions they want to ask, and then disputing all the myths that we were all told about things like amotivation or the gateway theory, but then jumping right in with the data that really are pretty compelling about how marijuana in the developing brain is just not a good combination, and then without being alarmist, explaining that the possibility of lowering IQ or changing the way the brain is structured by smoking heavy really early in life is really there, and then listening to their teens and talking to them about things they can do as an alternative without having to say, oh, you're never going to touch this or you're going to go to hell.
Yeah. Now, I imagine a lot of parents also, we're talking about sometimes the baby boom generation here, talking to their teenagers about marijuana, and a lot of them, you know, they dabbled a time or two or three or 12 when they were younger. How do you help a parent who's feeling like a hypocrite, perhaps, to try to tell their kid not to try marijuana when they were teenagers, they tried it and they didn't turn out so bad?
Well, the interesting thing is we didn't have the data back then. And so as much as I am, you know, completely happy about folks using cannabis in their adult life, it really just isn't a good idea early in life because of some of these alterations in brain structure and the potential to decrease IQ. And this argument with teens about I'm the adult, so I can do it, you're the teen, you can't, has never, you know, won a whole lot of plugs from the younger folks. But I think drawing the distinction that later in life there's an opportunity to use this without any harm is a seed you can plant with them, and they'll never in an argument say, okay, you're right, fine, I won't. But I think what often happens, particularly if you're willing to listen to their side in a non-judgmental way, is you get them thinking about the idea that maybe this is something that they shouldn't do now. And if you're not saying you can never do it, but just I want you to wait until your brain is developed, for some reason they find that argument a little more compelling, a little more something that they can tolerate. And then, you know, if you don't gloat, if you actually listen to them and hear their side and let them talk what they want to talk about, not only do they take home this message, but you're also really building your relationship. And you discover that, in fact, teens are delightful little people and that you have a really neat relationship with your own children. And in some ways, that's a buffer against all the problems that folks could have with marijuana early in life anyway. And so you've really laid a nice foundation for not just a little drug prevention program, but preventing problems in a whole bunch of domains.
Absolutely. Yes, I look back to my teenage years. I grew up, you know, in the early 80s as a teenager, and I can tell you the method that doesn't work is the Nancy Reagan just say no method. You tell a teenager just say no, and the first thing they want to say is, oh, yeah? So.
Well, we had a big just say no on premarital sex in Missouri where I grew up, and so, of course, when I had a date, I often said, do you mind if we do X? You could just say no. Meaning they could say, no, they don't mind.
Well, yes. Now, another issue that a lot of parents are facing, especially, or, you know, particularly in the states that have decriminalized or allowed the use of medical marijuana, is that we may have some parents who are using medical marijuana completely legally who have very young children. And how do you tell, you know, getting away from the teenagers and talking about the very young kids, how can these parents explain their use of marijuana when the little kids are going to be getting the message that that's criminal and that's illegal in a lot of ways?
I've really been impressed with folks, even, you know, 5 to 7 years old, getting the distinction between medicine and drug, illicit drug, pretty well. The other thing I'm finding just informally is folks who use the vaporizer, for some reason, their kids seem to see that as some kind of special instrument for the administration of medicine, whereas folks who are smoking joints are having a harder time making this argument, in part because that's sort of the way it's depicted at their drug schools, if you will, their little educational programs. Karen O'Keefe of Marijuana Policy Project and I did a big review of the states that have medical marijuana laws and those that don't, and there's actually no difference in teen and you know adolescent use when you compare those states. So I don't feel like this is a thing that should have a dramatic impact in some kind of weird negative way. And I think the other issue is when parents really emphasize the change in their symptoms. So I have a friend right now going through chemotherapy with kids, and she, you know, gets really, really nauseated. And when they see her feel better, there's no way they're going to argue against something that's made, you know, their mom basically capable of eating food and staying alive. And it's funny how just by sharing how you actually feel about the symptoms can really get them on your side in a way that nothing else could.
Yeah, and I'm going to encourage everyone out there listening, if you're a parent and you're looking for a way to talk to your kids about marijuana, this book is a definite help, The Parent's Guide to Marijuana. It's available out at Amazon.com. We've also got links to it up on our Stash blog at stash.normal.org. And Dr. Erlewine, I can't let you go without attacking something that that we talked about on last week's Stash. Another one of these alarmist headlines. You know, when people see the word doctor with these reefer madness headlines, they tend to give it a little credence. And this was a story that came out of Toronto, Canada. This was a trial that's going on where a man was in a psychotic state and beat his girlfriend to death. And this doctor who got up on the stand to testify, his name was Dr. Stephen Hucker, said that it was highly likely that the guy was in a psychotic state and that what was partially to blame for his psychotic state is he says his mental illness had been induced by chronic marijuana use. And he told the court that that he was a daily user of marijuana and that studies have determined that frequent users of cannabis have double the risk of developing mental illness or schizophrenia. So I thought we'd just throw that at you and see what you could do with that.
I sometimes just don't know where to begin with these anymore. It's really funny. Schizophrenia itself is an incredibly rare disorder and isn't at all doubled by the use of marijuana. And anybody who thinks that marijuana would cause aggression has obviously never smoked any, so it's just such a preposterous thing there. The bottom line on this mental illness literature is, yeah, you do see some statistically significant increases in mental illness in folks who use marijuana really early in life pretty heavy, but the increase is about a 40% increase, and then when you start looking at the way they've actually assessed this psychosis, you realize it's kind of a joke. So there are 5 studies now linking marijuana to something called schizotypal personality disorder, which is a kind of schizophrenia light, if you will, where you report some odd experiences or some weird beliefs. Well, I just never really believed it and looked at some of the items on the questionnaire for assessing schizotypal personality disorder and found that in my sample, yeah, the marijuana users were higher on these questionnaires, but there was one question that it turned out was biased against the cannabis users, and it was, I use words in unusual ways. Well, Russ, anybody who's ever busted a blunt at 420 with his homies is certainly going to say, I use words in unusual ways. And it has nothing to do with being psychotic. It just has to do with being part of a subculture, if you will, with its own slang. And the other studies along these lines are a little better done, but end up making some of the same curious mistakes. The other thing is there's a new study out actually showing that cigarettes has a 1.6, a 60% increase in mental illness when you look at the data very closely longitudinally, and I don't see anybody saying that cigarettes are causing anybody's mental illness and turning them to aggression or anything like that. The bottom line is, essentially, I don't think marijuana causes psychosis, but I think some psychotic people do smoke it, and that's how we've gotten basically cause and effect all confused yet again.
Yeah, that was always my interpretation sometimes of these studies, is this idea that how are you controlling for the fact that, you know, if you were a schizophrenic person, wouldn't you be more likely to want to try to quiet those voices somehow? Maybe they're self-medicating rather than the medication causing the psychosis.
Well, and in fact, some of the longitudinal studies have done a decent job at trying to control for that, but then they make some other mistakes in basically drawing such a wide net around what is psychosis that you realize a whole lot of people who shouldn't be labeled in the psychotic group end up in there anyway. The biggest meta-analysis that came out in The Lancet last year basically walks through 7 different studies and points out that basically 6 of the 7 didn't require any impairment at all. And I discussed this set of work at length on YouTube on my talk from the Normal Conference last year. So if folks want to look that up, I go into pretty much detail about that literature, and I think they'll get a kick out of it.
Well, excellent. Dr. Earlywine, thanks again for joining us here every Wednesday on the Daily Audio Stash. And I want to remind everyone, we're still having our contest. If you'd like to win a copy of The Parent's Guide to Marijuana, we'll be giving away 3 free copies to people that send in their questions for Dr. Earlywine. So please send your questions to 420research@gmail.com, or you can send them directly to the Stash here at stash@normal.org. We'll pick 3 questions for Dr. Earlywine to cover. So parents, if you've got questions about your children and marijuana, please send them in and you could win a copy of The Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine, again, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday on The Stash.
Looking forward to it.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Well, according to Cannabis Carry, today is Folk Wednesday, and today we've got the perfect middle-of-the-week treat. A folky singer-songwriter to complement an expensive coffee and a mellow strain. John Nicholson is an amazing self-taught fingerstyle guitarist who calls Spokane, Washington, his home. Jonathan began playing guitar at age 15, and it sounds like the guitar has become an extension of his arms. Today's music hit, Grandma's Gettin' High, is an insightful ballad that evokes the country greats like Willie and Waylon. As the boomers are aging, it is natural that the median age of marijuana smokers is getting older. But I still think about an earlier generation that didn't have the same opportunities to partake, and I remember that it's never too late to learn. Have you talked to your grandparents about pot? I think I'll put that on a bumper sticker. If you like his music, please visit John's page at jonathannicholson.com. You can always find information about our artists at music.podshow.com, and you can download the MP3 for your collection at our website, stash.normal.org. This is John Nicholson and his song, Grandma's Gettin' High.
Grandma's turning 92, and that's a lot of years ahead of you. So listen close to what I say, 'cause Grandma's feeling old today. She said, I can't believe I'm sitting here, old as I am, never been stoned. I waited too damn long, so bring it on. Grandma's gonna fly. So I rolled it up and I passed it around. Grandma smoked the whole thing down. Said she was making up for wasted ground. So too many times she turned it down. She said, you live your life until it's gone. The things you never try just slip away. They're gone too. I waited too damn long, so bring it on. Grandma's gonna fly. And then she talked about the old days, said some things that blew my mind. See, 'cause you ain't seen a thing till you seen Grandma getting high. Now Grandma, she didn't have much time left. She made use of every breath, and I swear she smiled before she left, as I felt the world fall off her chest. Ooh, ooh. And as the gates of heaven opened wide, she slipped over to the other side. She was saying, hey, hey, hey. I waited too damn long, so bring it on. Grandma's gonna fly. I waited too damn long, so bring it on. Grandma's gonna fly. Fly.
What's up, guys? This is Miss High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
All right, here at the Stash, we're very happy to have with us Danny Danko, who is the cultivation editor for High Times Magazine. Danny, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Russ.
One of the things, you're an acknowledged expert on the cultivation of cannabis, and one of the things that's happening here in my home state of Oregon and in 11 other states where they're allowed to grow marijuana for medicinal purposes is that a lot of these people like to grow their cannabis outdoors. And with springtime just around the corner, I thought this might be a good time for you to give people some tips on how they might get ready for the spring cannabis growing season.
Yeah, absolutely. Outdoors is a great option for people who have the space or who can find an area that's secluded enough to pull that sort of thing off. So, you know, you don't have to pay for the electricity for the bulbs or anything like that. And, you know, ganja is at its best, I think, when it's grown in the great outdoors.
Absolutely. And is there anything that when people are setting up their outdoor gardens, particularly with regard to location or setting, that they need to know setting up here for the springtime?
Well, I mean, obviously the ideal situation in the winter is to choose the spots that you want to put the plants in. Now, if you have a situation where you've got a backyard without neighbor access and that sort of thing, then, you know, that's always a decent idea because you'll be close to the plants and able to nurture them. But a lot of people kind of go the guerrilla route as well, where they'll find a patch of land with a decent amount of sunshine, maybe stuck behind some thorns or in a tough place to get to where hikers or hunters won't find it.
I see. So then as far as preparing for the season here, is there, I know, of course, this is going to differ varying on where you might be located in the country, if you're further north or further south, but is there a time where it's too soon to plant outdoors, or what sort of indicators do the people need to know when to start planting?
Right. Well, if you live in an area where the frost comes regularly, you definitely want to wait until after the frost to put the plants out. But ideally, you're starting those plants indoors, and you can build up a pretty decent-sized bush inside, even starting now in February, March, because you're really, for most climates in the United States and Canada, I would say, unless you're way south or way north, you're going to want to plant plants, you know, May or April, you know, if you want really big plants. And then some people, for stealth reasons, we'll put out plants in June and end up with smaller bushes, but easier to conceal. So it really kind of, it depends on the size of the plant and the climate, but the ideal thing, I would say, is to start them indoors from either seeds or cuttings and get them sort of toughened up before you plan to put them outside so that they're sort of acclimated to a little bit tougher conditions that they're going to face in the outdoors.
So growing straight from seed into the ground is probably not the most successful way to go about putting out your outdoor garden then.
No, I mean, plenty of people do that and have success, but I think the best thing is to start them indoors. And then sort of, if you have the right situation, you can acclimate them over the course of a couple of weeks by putting them out into sunshine for a few hours and then bringing them back into the artificial light that you have indoors. But if you do that, you're going to have more success because the plants going from indoors to outdoors are going to suffer a little bit of shock at the amount of heat and light that they're getting from the sun.
Are there any other differences that people need to be aware of as far as maybe watering or feeding the plants when they're growing outdoors as compared to growing indoors?
Well, if you're in your backyard and you're there and you're available to tend to the plants pretty much daily, you know, ideally you're going to want to water them as they're growing, and the bigger they get, the more water they'll use. But if you're in a sort of a guerrilla type situation where you can't get to the plants every day or even every week, you're going to want to use methods such as there's polymer crystals you can use that sort of absorb a lot of water, and you can use that in your planting mix, and that will and when it rains, it'll absorb that water and sort of release it slowly as the ground dries out. And you know, if it doesn't rain for 10 or 12 days, you really got to get out there, you know, with some water and put that on those plants.
Okay. Now, are there any just guidelines for people, any typical mistakes that maybe first-time outdoor growers might make that we could warn people about?
Well, I would say putting out the plants when they're too small is a mistake, because a lot of the creatures that eat plants, they like them when they're young, and then they won't really go after them after maybe the first, you know, few weeks or months of growth. So deer and such really enjoy young, very small cannabis seedlings, but they don't often eat flowering plants.
I see. So the larger the plant, the better. And also, I'd imagine when you're growing outside, you have many more pests to worry about. How can people protect their outdoor gardens from bugs and other critters that might want to eat up on their plants?
Well, that's just another difference between indoor and outdoor growing, because when you get an infestation indoors, you really have to deal with it yourself. Outdoors, however, there's sort of natural controls to keep infestations down. You know, if you get spider mites, pretty inevitably someone's going to come along and want to eat those spider mites, another bug. So there's sort of natural controls out there, but there's also other things like slugs and rodents and things that you wouldn't really find indoors, but that can be a problem. And there's products to deal with that. There's slug baits and things that you can place around the plants. People sometimes use chicken wire around their young plants to keep rodents and deer and such away from the plants as they're growing. And I would also say a lot of people don't anticipate how much sunshine they're going to need, because you want probably 5 or 6 hours at least of full sun, and then you want a decent amount of sort of diluted light as well in order to get big plants.
Gotcha. And I know that I remember as a kid when my mom would go out and plant her little, you know, tomato garden or whatever, that she used to bring in ladybugs and such to help to keep some of the infestations down. Is there any proactive steps people can take?
Absolutely, yeah. There's things you can order, ladybugs, which are great for kind of a short-term solution to a bug problem. There are predators out there that you can buy online or at many nurseries that will pretty much attack almost any sort of infestation that you might have on your plants, whether it be aphids or spider mites or white flies, pretty much anything that's going to come after your plants. There's a product out there that'll either keep them away or get rid of them as much as possible.
Well, excellent. We're all looking forward to the summertime and the growing season, especially those folks that are growing the outdoor plants. I don't know about you, but I've always found that the outdoor earthen-grown marijuana seems to be just a higher quality. Maybe I'm fooling myself, but it just seems to be better to me.
I think so. It has kind of a fuller, richer essence to it when it's not grown with artificial lights. And I would also recommend for medical growers to really explore organic alternatives when they're feeding their plants, because that really is going to show up in the end in the final product. And especially if they have medical issues and such, I would say to avoid a lot of the chemicals and metals that are in, you know, I guess industrial type fertilizers.
Yeah, the commercial fertilizers. We have that situation here in Oregon where we have many patients whose systems are very, very sensitive to any sort of pesticides or chemical alterations to the plant. So we definitely recommend the outdoor organic growing for those patients.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah, especially with issues with their immunity and things like that.
Absolutely. Well, we want to thank you, Danny Danko. He's the cultivation editor for High Times Magazine. And if you've got questions on growing and need tips, check out the latest issue of High Times. They've got their growing columns are always in the magazine and a source of great information. Danny, thanks for joining us here on The Stash today.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from the Christian Bible, Genesis chapter 1, verse 29. Then God said, quote, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. End quote. Well, you can't argue with an authority like that. I mean, God said that we are supposed to use all the seed-bearing plants, so if you'll excuse me, I got one seed-bearing plant that needs to be de-seeded. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Daily Audio Stash.